Okay. So peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to another week, to another town hall meeting, Black Wallets Matter. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, I want to run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls. It usually lasts for about 2 hours, but if we have a really good one and if everyone is so inclined, we will extend it. So first, let me just say in advance, I appreciate you all coming to hang out with us tonight. I hope you're feeling inspired because you are now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together for the purposes of discussing solutions to many of the problems we face in our community in an organized and an intelligent manner. If you notice when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we do that is to address one another, is to show respect and as a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we do not discuss religion, we do not discuss the black male-female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to black people in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into discussions about which party did this and which party didn't do that. These are all opinion. The reason we don't discuss these topics is because they're all opinion-based, and no one is right and no one is wrong, and we'll be here going around in circles all night. For all the guests on the call, let me tell you a little bit about this organization. If you haven't watched The Blueprint, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to address the problems in the black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spent $1.3 trillion last year. So if we were to pool just a fraction of our resources and practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact and transform our community. This is a form of black capitalism. No matter how you may feel about the capitalistic system, it is the one that we have here in America, and any radical ideas about operating outside of that system will just be a waste of precious time and resources. The best thing for us to do is to learn the rules of the game and get good at playing it. One of the biggest problems we have as black people is we practice these cycles of insanity. The definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. So, for instance, a tragedy will happen in our community and then we'll all start screaming, where are our black organizations? We need somebody to do something about this. And not only that, we want our black organizations to only be for the benefit of black people. We only want black people as members, but then we don't financially support those organizations. So what happens is those organizations reach out to other ethnic groups for support, and then we say, oh, no, they were never really for black people anyway, and I'm glad I didn't support them. Then another tragedy happens in a community, and we scream, well, where's our black organizations? We need them to do something about this. But then we don't support them, and then the cycle of insanity continues again. We need to get off this merry-go-round of madness. We need to start taking responsibility for solving our own problems, and we need to start supporting those who stand out to champion things for us, right? That's the purpose of the Black Wallets Matter Member Association. We want to bring together like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the black community and are motivated to take action. The first thing you need to understand when you have a systematic problem is you will need a systematic solution. That's why nothing else has worked for us before. We've never taken the time to build a system to counterbalance the oppression and the injustices we face. To build this system is going to require patience so that we can find out all the stuff we don't know. But we do know that it will require the support of our people and a plan to at least get us started. And that's what the blueprint video on our website provides. It explains how we can build a system that uses our existing resources to work for our own benefit. It's not perfect, but it is definitely something new. It's something different. It's well thought out. And personally, I think, you know, most of us are sick and tired of sitting around talking about what we could and what we should do, but never actually doing anything. So, you know, I just want to let every person on this call know tonight, if you are sick and tired of being sick and tired and you've had enough of, you know, what's going on, then this is the organization for you. If you're one of those people who believe that somebody else is responsible for fixing the problems in your own community, then this is not the organization for you, because we are about self-responsibility and accountability. We may not have caused the conditions that we suffer, but we're not going to just sit here and act like we're cool with it, you know, act like it doesn't bother us. It personally, it makes me uncomfortable, so much so that I'm willing to come on these calls every Thursday night and talk to a bunch of strangers and ask them to join me, even though they don't know me, and say, hey, listen, come aboard, join me, join the 300-400 other members that we have and help us solve these problems. Let's just start putting things to work. So let me be clear. The overall goal of this organization is to realistically change the economic, political, and social conditions of Black people here in America and abroad, right? Because we have a lot of brothers and sisters reaching out from us from Africa, the UK, Canada, places like that. Realistically, it will take a generation or two to achieve these goals, the goals that we set forth. And it will require a sacrifice from those of us who can to do for those of us who can't. So let me say that again. It will require a sacrifice from those of us who can to do for those of us who cannot. There are some people who say, listen, Brother Lou, I love everything about Black Wallets Matter. I really wish I could support, but I'm on a fixed income, or, you know, I have this going on. There's people who say I'm homeless and I'm listening to the calls. I'm calling in from a car and things like that. And, you know, we would really like to have the resources to help those people, but they'll come on and they'll still share some of their ideas and things. Then we have other people who are in a position to support, but they think like, you know, someone's trying to get rich with $10 or $25 or $50 or whatever it is, or they think we're going to run off somewhere. That's not what we're about. We're about really addressing the problems that we face in our community, and we are about making this organization different from any other organization that has been in the past. We need to first build that thing, though, right? Because we have to become the elders for the future generation. That's your children, your grandchildren. When we die, what are they going to say about our generation? That's really what we need to do. That's what we're working towards. We're working towards creating a legacy. And if we make conditions better for these children in the future, they're going to need certain protections in place, and that includes wealth and political influence. So if you're sick and tired of being in this condition and you're willing to set your differences aside and unite with your brothers and sisters, regardless of their religious and political beliefs, and focus on the goal of building a Black economy so that we can have the money to solve our problems, then we want you to join us. No matter what solution any of us come up with, it's going to take a financial investment. If you look at other ethnic and social groups, they prove that this model works. If you look at the Jewish community, if you look at the LGBT community, they have put the resources behind their ideals and behind their beliefs, and look how powerful they are. We need to stop focusing on our differences, and we need to stop getting so emotional when we hear the truth about where we currently stand as a people. We're messed up. We're at the bottom of the totem pole. I think we're like the second. We're at the second worst ethnic group in the country, above the Native Americans. So we need to learn how to agree to disagree with one another without burning the house down and abandoning the overall plan. And, you know, if that makes sense to you, again, I want to say that this organization is for you. All right? So let me tell you what a group of like-minded brothers and sisters can do together. So when we say our Black wallets matter, it doesn't necessarily mean we spend our Black dollars in every instance. It could mean we withhold them from businesses and entities that do not respect our patronage or have our best interests in mind. As the biggest spenders or the biggest consumers in the American economy, you can believe that if we united and boycotted certain businesses, we would have a major impact on the U.S. economy. And realistically, that's the kind of action that we need to take. So just imagine if every time one of our unarmed brothers and sisters are killed, we band together and we killed off one of their businesses, right? Just imagine the type of impact that would have across America. America fully understands economics. And once we show them that we understand how the game works too, they'll stop. They'll get the message and they'll stop messing with us. Now, everyone has their own ideas about how to solve the problems in the Black community. And while I believe Black people can do anything, we don't have the time, energy, and resources to do everything. So with that said, here are the priorities of this organization and the issues we intend to address. We intend to address the issue of black poverty, which affects over 70% of our single black mothers, black unemployment, which affects us at 50% compared to 9% to white, and this recent wave of racially motivated police brutality. The reason we are focused on these issues is basically because these are the things that will make these are the things that will put protections in place for future generations of black children, and how we will really, really make an impact on what's going on in our community. Here's how we plan on addressing these issues. As a member association, Black Wallets Matter collects membership dues. We are not a nonprofit organization. We are structured as a B Corp, which is a benefit corporation. Benefit corporations are businesses that exist for the sole purpose of helping a particular group of people. So Black Wallets Matter exists for the sole purpose of conducting business to help the black community. Memberships start at $10 for the silver level, $25 at the gold, and $50 at the platinum level. Our goal within the next 3 to 5 years is to get 1 million association members. If you are a brother and you attended the Million Man March in any of those years, then you felt the electricity of 1 million souls standing together in solidarity, and that is the experience we're trying to recreate. Yet this time we want lasting results of those 1 million brothers and sisters. With 1 million members, this organization would be generating over $300 million a year in revenue. With that kind of revenue, we could get a $1 or $2 billion loan. And with $1 or $2 billion, we could buy large-scale businesses such as manufacturing plants, supermarket chains. We can do so many phenomenal things with that money. One of the main things that we are doing, that we're focused on, is building these community resource centers. The community resource centers provide job training for our brothers and sisters, right? So the brother got on the call the other day. I keep calling them skilled trade. He called it the building trade. We want to teach our brothers and sisters a way to earn a living with their hands if they do not want to go to school. Like, so we just can't leave them out there dangling to fend for themselves. People need to go out there and be able to earn a decent living. Transportation was also one of the other industries that we want to focus on. We want to take our brothers and sisters and prepare them to jump into the transportation industry. It's growing. As of lately, I've been having a lot of people hit me up, and they've been talking about getting our brothers and sisters involved in IT and setting up these networks. These are all growing industries, and these are things that we could definitely teach. You know, we can take a group of brothers and sisters in like a school setting environment and teach them these skills, and then they can get the certification, get the CDL licenses, get whatever it is that they need, and then they can move on and start making, start having basically a career. In addition to that, the community resource centers will serve as a safe place for our youth to go instead of hanging out on the streets and getting in trouble. And while they're there, they can learn about their history. They can learn computer programming, and then they can learn about what we were talking about, black codes, which would basically be redefining what it means to be black, right? So we don't have it fully fleshed out, but like, for instance, it would be things like, you know, black people don't kill one another, black people work together, basically the opposite of all the negative behaviors and characteristics that we have now. We would teach these children the opposite. And the main important thing that we would be teaching in these community resource centers is financial literacy, right? We will be teaching these brothers and sisters how to manage whatever type of money it is that they have coming in, and be able to learn how to use that money for investing purposes and leaving something for their posterity. All right. And so we want to look at these large scale businesses, the manufacturing plants and supermarket chains, et cetera. Another portion of the profits from that would go towards hiring lawyers and lobbyists in Washington to protect and enforce our civil rights. This will make it harder for law enforcement to kill our unarmed brothers and sisters and get away with it. Other groups in this country have successfully used laws that were put on the books for our protection, and they have used it to protect their members. So it's time we start doing the same. These are very lofty goals, and they will take years of hard work to achieve. So to get the ball rolling and have a quick win, we have set a current goal of 2,000 founding members. So let me explain what a founding member is, because I think people aren't really quite understanding what this means. Black Wallets Matter was conceived last year and implemented at the beginning of this year, right? So we have about 400, we have members falling in and out, right? But, you know, we're at about the 400 member mark. As a founding member, you are coming aboard to help us build this thing. That could be ideas, if you have previous experience or if you know what you're talking about. I hear a lot of people come up with like a lot of different ideas, and I'm like, well, how are we going to implement that? And they don't understand. They haven't thought about it. If you're providing financial support, that helps as well. You can be a founding member. We have some founding members who have been paying their membership dues, and they have never contributed anything. They've never come on any calls or anything else, but that is the extent of what their contribution is. And when I speak to them, they say, listen, I want to provide financial support. Not everyone knows how to build an organization. That's just the truth of the matter. We need to start understanding that, like I said, I believe black people can do anything, but we can't do everything. And then realistically, how could we actually do something that we have never done before? If we do not have the previous experience, how are we just going to start, like, pulling this stuff out of the thin air and then know how these things operate? And when I pose that question to people, some people, they get offended. Oh, you don't want to listen to this. Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, well, it's logical. That makes sense. If you've done something before, then, yes, then by all means, give us all your ideas. We'll follow. We'll take your lead, especially if it's more successful or whatever it is. But if you don't know what you're talking about, or if you have never done something, don't take offense, because we have a blueprint. And the blueprint is well-researched and is based on experience and is based on things that have already – based on success. It is taking all the components of successful organizations. I have started successful organizations before. They weren't of this nature, but I have led groups of people The structure, the way that we're set up in terms of not being a nonprofit, is so that we can be able to do the political maneuverings and the things like that. Because if you're a nonprofit, there's a limit to exactly what you can do. If you look at all of the policies that are being implemented in this country, they are made for the benefit of companies. Companies are the ones that are coming up with all of this unfair nonsense that's going on. And it's not just affecting us. It's affecting everybody in the American society. So we need to learn to play the game. We need to become a company too. They have the Koch brothers. They lobbied hard and spent so many millions of dollars for this Citizens United thing, which allows companies to now put as much money as they want behind their political interests with no limit. It's just crazy. And then they're also being looked upon as being people, as being individuals. And they use, I think they use the 14th Amendment for that. They use that. The 14th Amendment was for us. So this is what I'm saying. We need to start paying attention and learn the game. So when you become a founding member, we are asking you to help us build this thing. Get in where you fit in and help us. If you have previous experience in a certain area, then by all means, please help us. It's not, this stuff does not happen overnight. I am the chief cook and bottle washer. Since Black Wallets Matter has launched, slowly but surely, it has just become my all-day everything, my all-day, everyday, like, business. I'm constantly fielding calls. There's members on this call now. They know I'm on the phone talking to them 2-3 o'clock in the morning while I'm maybe writing something up, while I may be working on a website, while I may be working on a Facebook page or whatever it is. But that's the type of dedication that I believe that we need to get this thing off the ground. And so the founding members would help us. That would help us financially. We've had different initiatives that we wanted to launch. The first initiative that we wanted to launch with the membership dues from the founding members was a shopping portal. The reason why is because black folks shop. So we had created these relationships where wherever we shop at some of the major stores like Amazon and Target and Walmart and all these other different places, we would get a portion of that money back. We would get a commission for referring our people. We wanted to build out an app for that. We wanted to build out a component on the website for all of that. The next thing that we wanted to do, we wanted to create the Black Wall Street Project, right? And that's still in the works. So I'm still working on that, behind the scenes. And now what we're talking about doing is launching the ambassadorship program. And the ambassadorship program allows brothers and sisters to form chapters of Black Wallets Matter in their local areas. There's a lot of people that are excited about this because they're like, hey, this national organization is cool, but I want to see some actual change in my local community. And that's great. And that's what we want. We want brothers and sisters to be able to have an impact on their local community. But that also comes with guidelines. That also comes with knowing how to do what you have to do. And we've provided those guidelines. But one of the biggest things that I'm noticing, so we have a lot of people who aren't yet members of the organization. They say, I want to be a member. I want to be an ambassador. And then I respond to them like, well, how can you be an ambassador of an organization that you are not yet a part of? So I see things like that, like, boggles my mind. So we invite them, hey, so why don't you consider becoming a member? Hey, why don't you come on a call? Some people say, no, I'm fine. Well, when you guys get it together, then just have the ambassadors reach out to me. So I'm saying, so yet again, you expect someone else to do the work for you. So yet again, you want someone else to go ahead and, take their time, money, and energy, set the thing up, and then you come along later, and then what are you going to do? Are you going to accept responsibility too? Are you going to accept the accolades and say, hey, I built this as well? It's like, that's what I was talking about with that cycle of insanity. And we need to get past that. So, like I said, if anything that I've said to you makes sense, then you want to check out what we're about. Then you should join us. If you want to come on at the $10 level, which is silver, then that's fine. You can do that. We offer full financial transparency. You can become a member. You'll look in. You'll see the financial report. There's no great deal of money. We're not running off with anyone's money. The organization is not, well, maybe this month we may be at break even. I haven't actually started doing the calculations yet, but we're probably like at about break even or a little less, because we have had a bunch of new members come in. So that's essentially what this is about. What Black Wallets Matter is about. So I was asking another sister earlier, what did she think it was about? She was talking about building black wealth, starting our own businesses and things like that. I want to say this. Yes, we are about building black wealth, but we are not about building black wealth for the sake of enriching one individual. We are talking about building black wealth and black businesses for the sake of us all. We know our people. They will not come aboard unless they see it first. So there has to be some group of people that make the sacrifice to build it so that they can see it. Then they'll come aboard, and then this thing can become bigger. We don't have like a selfless organization. We don't have a selfless component within our community, which is basically a building or something that we own, that we control, that our children in these inner cities or wherever it is, these black communities, they're able to walk out of their homes. They're able to go in and get lunch and breakfast and even dinner if necessary. They're able to go in. They are expected to conduct themselves a certain way. Like, there needs to be a code of conduct amongst our brothers and sisters. You understand what I'm saying? But most of these parents, it's like babies raising babies, right? So they probably weren't raised the way some of us from back in the 70s and the 80s were. So we need to go back, and we need to start providing that structure and that guidance to their children. And because they want to go to the club and because they want to go do something, maybe they may even be working. Who knows? But we don't need to let the TV raise the kids. We don't need to let the iPad and the iPhone raise the children anymore. There needs to be elders within the community who accept that responsibility. We accept that responsibility and we raise them. And you know, me and a brother Cujo, we were talking earlier, the beautiful thing about children is you can put whatever you want into them and it will grow and it will blossom, and that's all the children will know. So he emphasizes, I do as well with my children, emphasize the importance of financial literacy, financial responsibility, entrepreneurship, empire building, building for the legacy, leaving a legacy, things like that. We emphasize that in our homes. And your kids will just start talking like that. They will start thinking like that. And then when they become adults, that's what they will do. They will go out and they will take jobs and they will build businesses and do things that are all oriented towards building a legacy, that are oriented towards building wealth, that are oriented towards pushing our race further ahead instead of being like every man for himself and trying to take whatever they can. Because that's one of the other things that hurts us. We constantly want to just take and take and take and take and never give back. And that's because most of us don't have a model where we see where we give selflessly and then we are able to receive or it benefits another one and it gives us that good feeling or whatever it is. We don't have that model, and there has to be a group of us to do it. I believe that we can do it with 2,000 black men and women from all across the country. I have a lot of friends that are members now from all over. I speak to Sister Shauna. I speak to Brother Cujo. I had long conversations with Brother Will. Speak to Sister Rhonda. These are people from all over the place. And we have these very, very deep, intense, and long conversations. And that's based on creating this membership, and all of us want to, like, push our people together. I mean, push our people further, and we want to do it together. So, like I said, I want to ask anyone if anything that I've said to you makes sense, if it resonates with you, then we want to ask you to join us. It's, like I said, $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold, or $50 at the platinum. I will open the call for any questions or comments or whatever anyone has. Please, keep the comments or your discussions pertaining to, what we're talking about now. If you have something that you would like to bring to the floor later, then, let me know, and then we'll put you back in the queue. I'm going to put it in Q&A mode, and you can press *6 on your phone. First, hold on. We have a new caller coming. Caller from 404-719. Your first name, please.
Well, my name is Scott.
Scott. Okay, cool, brother Scott. Thank you, brother.
How you doing?
All right. Okay, so I'm going to put it in Q&A mode, and if you have any questions or comments, then you can press *6. You know what? It looks like we have a lot. We have more members than guests on this call. So, hold on, Sister Felicia. Yes, Sister.
Hi, Brother Lou. This is Felicia from Atlanta. So, my question is pertaining to the short-term and intermediary goals or milestones that you are planning to reach before you get to the larger goal. You mentioned, a lot about system building and building the organization. So what are some of the small-term goals short-term goals that you are planning to reach?
Okay, so the first goal, we have two. The first is to get this organization to at least break even where it's self-sustaining. And then that goes hand in hand with our other goal of 2,000 founding members. Actually, we would be self-sustaining before 2,000 founding members, but that's Those are our initial things. Right now, this ambassadorship program is the initiative that a lot of people are really excited about and working on. And so it's like working out the kinks on that ambassadorship program. So we have a long list of places where people want to start chapters. But, you know, as so the past few weeks, I've been fielding calls from different people in different areas as they've been trying to get their chapters off the ground or having their meetings. And I'm realizing that I probably will have to rein it in. I probably will have to say, hey, let's establish a few chapters first to find out what we don't know and roll that out. So, you know, that's the priority right now. And then that is a priority. And then getting out this Black Wall Street project, which is a financial literacy training course. And basically, you know, like I said, we have a lot of people who say, I would like to support, but I'm not in the financial position. And then that would be an opportunity for people to learn some money management skills and also be able to earn an additional income. So that's what's on the to-do list with stars right next to it now.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Anyone else have a question or a comment? Okay. So listen, so here's something that I want to talk about. This ambassadorship program. Okay, Brother William, hold on. Yes, Brother William.
Hey, Brother William. Hello. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you got some feedback there, but okay, I can hear you now.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment. I was listening to you speaking, and I heard you talking about those people who said, well, you know, I'll come on later on after you get it all together. And I think that people need to look at things more as when I'm building something for the next generation or for my children and their children, is it really about me getting accolades or am I willing to, what will I sacrifice for my children? Or do I want to see my children continue down the path that we see in the trajectory that we see that they're on today? Or am I willing to sacrifice to make some changes to that trajectory so that they can be headed down another path? So it's not about my accolades, it's about me receiving any notoriety for something that I do. But, it's like something I could do quietly if it need be, because it's not about me. It's about where I want to see my family and the next family arrive. And a sister asked about short-term goals. Personally, one of the things that I'd like to see us do, you know, I know that we have at least maybe 15, 20 cities right now that we have members in that have spoken about starting chapters. Now, if each one of those start a chapter and could reach that local chapter could reach 100 members, well, you know, we've reached the 2,000 mark. So what we're talking about is totally doable. It does take some pulling up the sleeves and getting out
of here. You have some feedback. You have some feedback in the line, brother.
I'm sorry. Well, I don't know where it's coming from. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Brother, I had to mute you. That was crazy. Hold on for a second. Let's try it now.
Yeah, can you hear me okay now?
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know where I'm getting the feedback. I'm not around any electronics, but I hope that all my brothers and sisters on the line understood what I was trying to get to, and that's about we have to be selfless at this point and say it's not about me or my receiving accolades or anything that I do or me receiving any notoriety even for what I do. And I may not get any remuneration for what I do, but it's about me willing to sacrifice to see my children and their children reach a different level in the society than they are at right now. That we stop killing each other and that we stop looking at each other the way that we do today and start to appreciate each other in another way, and therefore help the whole society appreciate us too. And I was speaking about the local chapters can do a lot, because if we get 20 local chapters with 100 members, we've reached the 2,000 members that we want to start off with. So local chapters is, I think, a great idea, because it puts it on a more personal level where you can talk with, meet with, brainstorm with, eyeball to eyeball with people in your local community to get things started. So I just wanted to add that to the conversation.
Those are very good points. It makes it very real.
Very real to them.
It makes it very real. And I like, so initially I was against the chapters. I was against the local chapters because of some of the challenges that I'm facing now, and I didn't really want to take that on. But I do realize that this is for the greater good, because what I'm realizing is, no matter how many members we have, we must keep marching. We must keep marching forward. Every morning I wake up, when I wake up or whatever, when the kids getting ready for school, we do with something what's called a 20-mile march, which, I'm trying to instill a habit of being healthy, and exercising daily for my children. So we'll get up, we'll do 20 push-ups, jumping jacks, squats, things like that, right? It's called a 20-mile march. That's essentially what I try to do with this organization. Brother Cujo, Sister Shauna, they can tell you, I call them all the time, and I'm like brainstorming ideas. How can we do what we want to do with what we currently have?
Absolutely.
I'm always thinking like that. And that's how, and that's where we are, because like I said, this is part of my 20-mile march. Get on these calls every week, sit down, explain what Black Wallets Matter is, invite, some guests to become members and things like that. But I'm focused on doing what it is that we said we're going to do with the current membership level that we have, whether we get to 2,000 or not, because I'm not accepting any excuses. And I believe that we can do it. And I've had like a really, really bright brainstorm I've been having. Hold on, brother. I got to mute you for a second, brother, because that feedback is still coming back.
Okay, go ahead.
I've been brainstorming, and I think I came up with something, and we'll talk about it in a few, that will really work for us to be able to get the sustainable funding that we need to push some of these initiatives. From talking to a lot of folks, like I said, when I speak to people and they say, well, they make some ideas or whatever it is, and then I ask them about the financial or the financial component of it, I'm realizing a lot of our folks don't take those things into account. We'll say, all right, cool, they won't support a Black organization, they won't do it. I'm starting to really think that maybe they don't think they need financing. Maybe they don't think they need financial support, because very few people, they propose the idea and then it's like, and here's how we get the money for doing that, or this is where the financial component fits in. And that's really what the distinction of Black Wallets Matter is, as opposed to a lot of these other organizations. I say it in the blueprint. We are prioritizing, revenue generating activities, because we understand that's why a lot of our organizations fail. There is no one who's being paid to wake up every day and become our advocate. That's what the problem is, and that's what we need. And the only way you can do that is to have a sustainable source of funding that you control. And we're prioritizing that. So I'm sitting down and I'm talking to the people who are having the chapters, who they're meeting together, and they're already jumping like a few steps ahead in terms of like some of the guidelines. And I'm saying, well, how are you going to do that if you don't have the money yet? Like, you guys haven't even, formalized the board. You guys haven't even, started, putting things together and figure out how you're going to get money in to do X, Y, Z. So, You know, so I have to, like, go back and reconfigure things and try to look at it, you know, from different perspectives or whatever. But no matter how I look at it, it's going to take some type of funding. And I'm realizing, you know, I think a lot of our folks just, they just don't think about that. I don't know how to explain it, man. But I want to thank you, Brother Will. Sister Felicia is in the queue. Is there anything you want to add in summary, brother?
No, that's all I really wanted to say. I just wanted people to think about in a much longer range as far as, you know, what we're doing today is not just for today. And it's not, like you said, one of those situations where we're going to be doing it today and tomorrow. We're going to have to repeat the same thing. It's a movement that we're starting today, and it's going to be, we want it to be a sustainable movement that'll take us into the future. And that's the vision that we need to grasp. So that's all I really wanted to add.
Thank you so much, brother.
All right.
Caller from 917-557, your first name, please. Caller from 917-557, your first name, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Shanice.
Shanice. Okay, sister, hold on. All right, thank you, sister. Sister Felicia.
Hi, Brother Lou. This is Felicia from Atlanta. I have a question about research and networking. And so my question is, to what extent are we researching what other organizations and companies are doing and networking with other organizations and companies around some of the goals that we may have in common? So, for example, when we're thinking about political lobbying in regards to our civil rights, you know, there are some national organizations and things like that that are doing that, and they may not be exactly focused on what we want to focus on, but some of them are. So that's just one example. So are the chapters already doing that kind of researching and networking and reaching out, even if it just means finding out how to not recreate the wheel, or also how to just work with those organizations or companies to, you know, bring things together and make their efforts stronger.
Okay, so let me clarify. With the chapters, with the ambassadorship program, this is a new initiative. It just launched, I want to say, 2 weeks ago. And it's an iterative process. We have Cincinnati and Detroit are the closest to having the members that they need for their boards, which is you need board members. In regards to research, in terms of how some other organizations and things operate, I have done extensive research at the onset of launching Black Wireless Matter, but ongoing, what one of the biggest problems that I'm noticing when different Black organizations try to interface, they don't know why they should be interfacing. They don't know why they should be trying to network. We don't have there's no playbook. So what I've been doing is when I reach out to these other when I meet another organization, because you know sometimes I'm introduced. Well, when I'm introduced to another organization and I speak to them and I say, okay, so what are you guys doing? They may be the people who are saying we need our own place here in America. We need like our own land. We need, you know, this, and this, right? And so they're focused on that. And then they'll ask me what I'm focused on. And I'll say, well, you know, I'm not thinking about trying to go get our own little place here. I'm trying to figure out how to work within the existing system or whatever. A lot of times I find that we're not able to get past that. I don't like to argue with people about what they believe. If you're in a struggle and you're trying to fight for the betterment of our people, then that's good enough for me. But, you know, we have a lot of people who they hold fast to their, they hold on tight to their point, and they don't know how to agree to disagree for the overall objective. So that's so those are two problems. So one, right, we don't know why we need to be networking, and then two, if we find out that we want different things, then you know we can't communicate. But this is what my personal belief is, and this has been my experience in life. You need to have your act together when you go and you reach out to someone else who has their act together. So let's say if we were to go and reach out to, let's say the NAACP or one of these other larger, more established organizations, we better have, dot our I's and cross our T's. We better go in with an action plan and with a track record and all of these other different things. Because if we come in there looking like a rinky-dink organization, disorganized or whatever else, we will immediately be dismissed. It's very unfortunate, but you know, we're really suspicious and guarded when it comes to dealing with other Black folks anyway. So it's only after we're able to gain the trust of someone based on them being able to vet us or whatever it is, that's when they feel more comfortable to work with us. And right now, to be honest with you, I am just so focused on Black Wallets Matter reaching the goals that it has set for itself and solidifying itself and making sure that it is being viewed as something completely, totally different from whatever else is going on out there. So this is a place for normal people who just are sick and tired of what's going on and need a way. I'm trying to make this thing like I said, a system. I'm trying to really set it up like a system with no discernible head. That has been one of the flaws that we have had in the past with our past Black organizations. There's a leader who wants to stand out the front and be known as the charismatic leader. We don't need that. That doesn't work for us. Those models don't work. Unless you get into the system and you let them dictate your terms, we don't want to do that. We want to come in under the guise of business, because that is what America respects, and then we are just using our profits for the reasons that we said we are. We're using our profits for the benefit of our people. And a lot of different organizations, when I speak to them, they kind of haven't prioritized the financial component. And they have, you know, and this is not digging on, you know, no one and saying, you know, we're better or whatever it is. When I sit down and I talk to people and I say, so what are your objectives? What are your initiatives? You sit down, we do that, and I say, well, how are you going to fund that? And they're like, we're going to get donations. Donations aren't sustainable. You may do good this year. You may not do good next year. But you still, that initiative still needs to be funded. How are you going to do that? And then a lot of people, they take offense from that. Our people need to give more. Okay, well, they need to, but they don't. So you need to figure out an alternative way. But, you know, hey.
I totally agree with you. I mean, definitely a movement needs to have, a body of leaders, not, you know, where every individual is a leader, not just one single head of the organization and they're the only people holding it all together. And also, you know, the financial component is extremely important. But another part of that question was research, because some of these organizations, especially some of the national ones, are doing a really good job at holding it together. So, part of one of the things that I've found a lot of organizations do is that they always try to recreate the wheel, and they don't leverage what's already there. And so we spend a lot of time starting things from scratch when there's people that have done it before, people that have gone through certain pitfalls, people that are operating in waters that we want to operate in, and we can learn from them, even though we may not be in a space where we are, ready to, be a power to be reckoned with. We can still learn from them and still make those connections as well to strengthen our own organization.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're all about. Have you had a chance to watch the Blueprint? The Blueprint video on our You watched the blueprint video?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then you understand that's what we're about. Success
yeah.
Leads Clues. We are about building and looking at successful organizations, taking the best of what they have done and implementing that within our within our organization. We are about using our brothers and sisters, using our existing behavior, right? Making it easy for them to basically help themselves. That's what I believe is going to be be our way of being successful. We're going to have to figure out a way where Black people can stay being the way they are and still help themselves. And I believe that shopping was going to be one of the major ways. And I still believe it. I'm actually still focused on that because that's what we do best. We shop. So now if we can figure out, and I know everybody wants to say, oh, we need to buy Black and we need to do this and we need to keep the money in our own community and, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is we don't. I understand what we need to do, but I am looking at what is. What we do is we take our money and we spend it wherever we're going to get the best deal or wherever we're going to buy the stuff that we actually want. So what I'm trying to focus on is working out a deal with the people at the places that we shop and then tell them, listen, we want a kickback. We organize these people and we want a kickback. And then if we're able to get money, that provides one thing of sustainable funding. And then as recently we started looking at like used clothes and all this junk that people have in their house. Most of us have junk in our house. And knowing us, we will have something that we wore one or two times and won't wear it again, and it's just in there. So it's good quality stuff. So we're sitting down. So I've been talking with so we have another member, another founder member. His name is Brother Kareem. So we have this nonprofit organization called Wheelchairs Against Guns. Wheelchairs Against Guns goes to the inner city schools and it teaches the children about the dangers of bullying, gangs, and gun violence. These are brothers who are in wheelchairs because they've been shot, and they go to the schools and they tell the kids, listen, man, I was out there doing gang banging, selling drugs or whatever it is, and look at me. They usually tell you about death and in jail. They tell you about you'll wind up in either dead or in jail. No, you could wind up in a wheelchair, and this is a living hell. And the program is very, very effective. So we have that nonprofit component where we could actually go around, start getting, all these clothes, all this junk stuff that people have, and basically sell it. And then as people make these donations, they're able to get it as a tax write-off. They get the tax deduction. So that's something that we want to implement in our chapter. That's why I was, so excited these past couple of days, because I'm like, all right, I got it. Because now, you know what? It doesn't require anyone to pay any money, right? So you don't have to come out of your pocket. The chapter is able to be sustainable. All they have to do is go around and clean out people's junk. Tons of people got junk. It's tons and tons of stuff. And they're able to get a tax write-off through our working with, Wheelchairs Against Guns, working with another. Well, I mean, it's basically our sister-brother organization, because Black Wallace Matter actually was birthed from Wheelchairs Against Guns, because I was, I was part of Wheelchairs Against Guns first. But that's me constantly thinking, like, how can we use what we have to get where we want, using the current resources. And I'm telling you, I really, really believe that this program, this recycling these clothes and all this furniture and junk and all, I think this is really, really going to put the organization ahead. Now, if you want to say research, I've been researching other groups, other organizations that use this model. The three of them that I've researched so far, they do billions of dollars using this same exact model. Billions with a B. Goodwill is the main one. And the best thing about Goodwill, but they have like a complicated structure. So they have Goodwill Industries, which deals with the tax deduction part, and then they have like another business component that actually does with the finance and dealing with the money and all that other part. But we have that, it just so happens we have that same capability. because we have Will Cares Against Guns, which is a nonprofit organization, and then we have Black Wallets Matter, which is a benefit corporation. Those things can work hand in hand. And I mean, could you imagine? So you tell black folks, hey, listen, you got a bunch of junk in your crib, we'll get rid of it.
Yep.
Get rid of it, and you're helping your community. And then that would also be able to help the other people who may not have the money and need good stuff at a good price. I mean, this I'm like beyond excited about this idea. I've been like hopped up crazy thinking about it. And now we're just trying to work out the logistics of how that would work from city to city. Because once we figure that out, that will be our model. And then they will say, well, how are you guys doing all of these other things? How are you guys supporting these community resource centers? How do you guys, you know, paying a retainer to keep these lawyers? Well, we got a bunch of junk coming in every day. And one of our things is we want to employ a lot of brothers and sisters. You think about all the clothes that have to be processed. They have to be washed. They have to be ironed. They have to be displayed. They have to be picked up. It's furniture. Books. It's all kinds of stuff that have to go in. That's tons and tons of jobs. Oh, man. So the 400 of us or whatever it is, like I said, you know, members fall in, fall out, but the roughly 400 of us, we will figure it out. This will work. This will work because I'm constantly saying, well, this is what we got. How can we do this with what we got? And then when you ask yourself questions like that, then ideas come about.
Uh-huh.
And so the membership, asking people to come on board, is because so we're going to need like a van, right? We're going to need to hire so this is like some of the ideas that we have right now. We're going to need a van, and we're going to have to hire a couple of people to probably run around and process the stuff. So I have the people, I have the members from the New York area. They are, like, committed to start working on it, as volunteering as much as they can. But that's going to require money. I am at the point where it's like, all right, cool, I'm just going to come out my pocket and do what we need to do so we can get this thing done. That's where we at, because I just want this model to work. Because once the model is proven to work, then we can roll it out in Atlanta. We can roll it out across, you know, we can roll it out across the country. And then we're like, this is what you guys do. And if it's really as successful as I'm hoping it can be, then we could help those chapters get those get the assets in place, because the thrift store is one of the major components. Because, I mean, again, you got to be able to sell this stuff. So you got to have a place to sell it. So it's just a few balls in the air. But I think this thing can be done. We're going to have a members meeting. I think we're going to have one next week. I'm going to talk to people. I'll see. Hopefully we can get the membership. Hopefully we can get the membership on board. And, you know, maybe we can raise some money that way to try to get this model, get this ball rolling, because this can just bring back unlimited dividends. And we have all the legal components that we need to do it. So, yeah. Sorry, sister. I went off. I just got excited. I started walking around and everything.
That's okay.
All right. Anyone else have is there anything you want to add in summary, or you're fine?
No, I think I'm okay, but you know, there are like lots of other businesses that we can start that don't necessarily require us to have like a brick and mortar or a large store, so that we're not really spending a lot of money on real estate unless we're buying it and the company owns it. So that's just a thought that I wanted to put out there for us to think about ways for us to create income and businesses that don't necessarily require, you know, us to have to have,
well,
like overhead and, you know, real estate and things like that.
I emphasize that all the time. Here's the challenge with that. It's not real to our people, right? So I am an advocate of online businesses. I am an advocate of doing things through the internet. I've been on the internet since 1994 or 5 or whatever it is. I've been making money on the internet since 2005, all aside from my real estate and my you know, I have like two other brick and mortar businesses. But aside from that, my everything else that I do is all digital, all online type stuff. I love that stuff because it makes sense. It's brilliant. But what we need to put people to work. And the only way that you can put people to work is you have to go into those old world businesses. You have to go into moving, picking up boxes, moving it from place to place, changing light bulbs, fixing stuff. You got to do that, you know, things that require man, right? So we have to look at those. On a personal level, I would prefer to do whatever, but see, this is, you know, I have to set my preferences aside. And I have to say, for the greater good, to get, you know, these brothers in Milwaukee working, I have to go and get some vans and get some boxes someplace that need to be moved over here. Briefly, for the ambassadorship program, some of the ideas that we're talking about, we prioritize things that are, quote-unquote, labor-intensive. So we have, like, people doing lawn mowing services, and handyman services, car washes.
I read that.
So those are the types of things that we want to try to prioritize for within these chapters, because one, those are services, those are brain dead simple businesses. So even people with very little business experience, it's like, hey, you go wash a car, you charge $20 for the car, and you pay the guy $10 that actually washed the car. The organization gets 10. That's simple math. It shouldn't be complicated. How many cars did you guys wash this month? That's also another consideration that I had to take into account, because I would love to say, hey, listen, you guys need to start creating these online businesses. Here's your click-through rates. Here's your impressions. Here's your conversion rate. You know, all of that stuff. But I will lose people with that.
Right.
And, you know, so if people see a bunch of folks out there, a perfect example with the ambassador program, I was speaking with a sister, yesterday. I told her what we want to do, one of the initiatives. So let's say they get their board together and they don't have enough members, right? They don't have enough members at the onset. Something they could do is get maybe 4, 5, 10. Right, so you got 4 members. You guys can get, you know, your brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews, throw on some Black Wallet Matters t-shirts or sweatshirts or whatever, and go and just do a community cleanup effort, right? Garbage bags and gloves, and just go pick an area and then start cleaning. And then there's one person standing there with flyers. As people walking by, riding by, they're gonna be like, "Well, what the hell are y'all doing? What is this?" And you give them a flyer and you say, "This is what we are. This is what we're doing." That's going to bring more notoriety and visibility to the organization. And then when the person, so when they call and they say, "Well, what is this? And what are they doing?" Oh, okay. Now that makes our people see someone actually doing something in their community before they're asked to do something. You see what I'm saying? So then the law of reciprocity kicks in. It's like, oh, they've already done something for us. They've already done something for the community. At the very least, we could come and check them out. And then, you know, hopefully the things that we're talking about make sense to them. And then they would be able to come on board as members. While I'm thinking of the Black Wall Street Project, while I'm thinking of, you know, this ambassadorship, when I'm thinking about how I'm marketing on Facebook, while I'm thinking about these closed drives, I'm sitting here thinking about how people in the chapter can actually market the chapter, you know, through flyers and through face-to-face. You know, there needs to be a script and some talking points that any brother or sister in a local chapter can be able to repeat or recite or, you know, to memorize, so that it, you know, nothing that's too complicated, something that would definitely allow them to sound intelligently and make sure that they're capturing the essence of what Black Wallets Matter is about. And, you know, so I got a lot of balls in the air, but, you know, I'm up to the task. And by the way, those are the priorities. Those things are on the whiteboard with the star right next to it. Like, priority, do this, do this, do this, do this.
Okay, so you already have someone who is making T-shirts and mugs and things like that for Black Wallet
Matter? No, I had someone I had someone who volunteered. This brother was very artistic. He's like, the logo could be better. This could be better, blah, blah, blah. You know, he's a professional graphic designer. I said, okay, cool. Go ahead. Go for it. He designed something, and I was like, but, bro, this doesn't look like a wallet. No, because see, what you got to do is you got to look at it like that. This is in the abstract. I said, brother, listen, I understand you are creative, but this is, you know, I'm thinking from a marketing perspective. Marketing has to be very simple and bold. People, you only have like 3 seconds before a person either decides they want to engage with it or not. 7 seconds if they're looking at it on a website and they're looking around and like, well, what the hell is this? And I'm trying to explain to them, as soon as someone sees that logo, they need to understand what they're looking at. They don't need to be interpreting your, you know, artistic expression. And he got offended, and so the brother disappeared. Because what happens is we need a graphic that's vectorized. And so it can stretch and, you know, be used on all types of things. So I have that as a priority, too. So that will happen. All right. And you seem knowledgeable about a lot of these things, so definitely hit me up. Are you a member, sister?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so you are in the Atlanta area. We have quite a few people in Atlanta. We had a few false starts in Atlanta in terms of that chapter. But if there's some things that you know that you want to bring to the table, then by all means, just send me an email and we can go from there.
Okay, and is there already somebody, is there an ambassador program in Atlanta?
Well, they haven't. So we had two members that they were attempting to meet, but apparently Atlanta is bigger than I even thought, and they're nowhere
like
near
Chicago.
Each other.
say Atlanta when we're like an hour away from Atlanta, but yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, they're like, all right, well, I'm actually over here, and the other person's like, I'm here, so they weren't able to get together. And then we had another brother. He came on last week. He was from Atlanta. He wants all the people from Atlanta to come on. So you know, so what we actually need to do when we have one of our member calls or whatever, I'll just try to start linking everyone up. But, you know, I do want people to basically adhere to the guidelines so that we have some semblance of order. There's a few more things that I need to include in those guidelines in terms of operations, in terms of, you know, what to do next step by step. To my mind, I thought it was rolled out. I thought it was explained in that manner. But, you know, I guess, you know, because of the questions that I've been getting, I guess I wasn't really clear. So I'm going to have to go back and then just start bullet pointing. Step one, don't move forward until you do this. Step two, don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I guess I have to be like that explicit. But I want to get as much feedback from the members first so that I know exactly what needs to be incorporated into that revised guideline.
Okay. I'll contact you through email about the people in the Atlanta area. Thanks.
Sounds
Thanks,
good.
Brother Lou.
Yep, no problem. All right. Okay, brothers and sisters, it looks like mostly everyone that's on is a member. So we have, if anyone on the call is not yet a member of Black Wallets Matter and you have a question about this organization, please press *6. And if not, then we are going to go ahead a little bit and talk about this. Yes, caller 601. Your first name, please.
Ronnie.
Peace, brother Ronnie. Hold on.
Yeah. Calling from Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay. Cool. All right, brother.
Hey, my first time on the call. Didn't actually know you guys existed until now. a friend invited me. That's up in New York.
Okay.
So I just been sitting here listening. I'm in Jackson. I'm a small business owner. I have two small businesses: a tax and accounting service and a ladies' fitness center. So just basically listening to all what you all what you were saying, because I came in on you, and getting an overview of what this organization is about. So that's where I am so far.
All right.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I said New York.
So what you can do is you can go on our website, and there's a video. It's called The Blueprint. So essentially what we did was we went over what this organization is about, and basically gave a summary of the blueprint. And that's essentially, and then we're talking about our ambassadorship program, which is allowing members to establish local chapters.
Okay. All right. We have an organization here called Respect Our Black Dollars. I'm not a member of it, but they're part of the, some of the people in it are part of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. So I might as well tell them about you all as well, so they can check you out too.
Okay, cool. All right, thank you, brother.
All right.
And Brother Scott.
Yes, how you doing tonight?
Peace, brother.
Yeah, Dr. Scott, I was listening to your program here, and I'd like to send you some information. I have already done that, emailed it to you. I'm with the African American Economic Recovery Think Tank in Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And I've seen the information here, 40 Acres of the Mule. It will give you information for your membership. That may be to help you out here a little bit with your organization. With no disrespect, but y'all all over the place. And with what we do, as I say, as a think tank here, we look at the condition of the African-American community here. And the number one thing that we see that's very important at this time is the land grab that's taking place under the present president administration. And we need to take a close look at land trust. It's very important, because if you look at the African-American community across the nation, in any major city, we have a lot of homes that's abandoned. That doesn't take a lot of money for us to own. And that's very important. You can have all the businesses in the world, and you can have money, but if you don't own property, you still have nothing. So it's very important if you take a look at the information shared with your team. I'll come back online and talk with you at a later time.
Let me ask you this. What do you mean? We're all over the place in regards to what our objectives, or like, what do you mean?
Your objectives. I was listening to you, and no disrespect, in a way, but when you present something, it should be already mapped out. When you take it to people, especially with my people, African Americans here, because they are looking for the negativity. So you have to be in line and know exactly where you're going, how you're going to get there, and your deadline for getting there. And I see that across the board. I've been doing civil rights and economics for 40 years. I'm not going to talk about my many accolades, but one of the most important things is our organization. And I see that across the board where it's NAACP, Congressional Black Caucus. I meet and talk with all of them from one part of the country to the other. And they have been established a long time, but they do not have any power. Power means that you can call shots, for example. Let me just use this for example. Asian who own the healthcare in our community. They didn't always own that. We used to own our own healthcare. Sorry about that. Funny. But we are not mastering anything in this country. And we have had leadership from the beginning of the time Christopher Columbus come around this country, come to this land. We are not controlling anything in this country but poverty. That's the only thing we control. We spend over $1 trillion, and we control nothing. Right here in Jacksonville, Florida, there's much information that's available to my community, leadership, religious leadership, political leadership. They are disengaged. So with us spending $14 billion right here in Jacksonville, we are not able to do nothing. Now, we have plenty of African-Americans in Jacksonville that make plenty of money, millionaires and stuff, but they're not connected. So we are not able to call shots, and that's very important here. So, like I said, I would like to be able to reach out and share some information, and I would recommend, I'm just recommend this here. We should, your group, should select one thing that we can do the whole year and master that, then move on to the next thing instead of being all over the place. Because we have a lot of intelligent African-Americans across the country, but we are disengaged. We are dysfunctional. And I don't want to say that tonight here because I'm a very positive person, but I have to tell the truth.
I appreciate your feedback. I'm curious as to when you came in on this call, though. Were you on this call?
No, I've been listening to your calls a few times. It's not the first time.
So you don't understand what our priorities are?
No, I understand. Saying something and doing something is two different things.
I understand that, but purpose of having these calls is to get the 2,000 founding members, so that we can launch our other initiatives. That is the reason why we have these calls every single week. That is what we are consistently doing. That is what we are doing with the resources that we currently have, constantly trying to educate our people, raise the awareness of what our organization is and what it is that we intend to do, and trying to find like-minded brothers and sisters. That is exactly what we do day in and day out. So I understand what you're saying. I wholeheartedly agree. You do have to have an organization that focuses on one thing. What I don't think you quite have considered is that, so although we have these calls every single week, we can't get on and say the exact same thing every single week. And when we have different people from different backgrounds, as we constantly evolve, as new information constantly becomes available to us. We started off, we said that the initial goal was 2,000 founding members. That has become the main priority, but that does not mean that we need to sit around, you know, those of us who have been a part of this thing from the beginning, we don't need to sit around and wait until we have the 2,000 founding members. We need to figure out what we can do with the current numbers we have. And there's no way, 7 months ago, we can say, hey, we would know, you know what, 7 months down the road, we're going to have 400 members, and we need to be thinking about we're going to be doing that. That there's like no way to know. That's why I said early on the call, it's evolving. We're building a system, and we have to find out. It requires patience, because we have to learn the things that we don't know, right? So we don't know what we don't know. So next time another organization comes behind us, they're able to say, hey, at 100 member milestone, you're able to do this. At a 200 member milestone, you're able to do this. At a 3 and a 4 and a 5 or whatever. We're basically figuring this thing out, because what we are doing is prioritizing the financing. So I encounter brothers and sisters who run into, who say, we need to prioritize the land. They're having this land grab. what people aren't realizing, or no one is, one, where are you getting the money? Two, okay, so you have the land. What are you doing? How are you developing it? Who has experience to develop it? Who's paying the taxes? It doesn't matter. You got the land grab, but the United States government owns 80, 90% of the thing, so you're still going to have to pay taxes somewhere. Where is the income coming in for the people who are living on the land that you find these people to develop? That's the reason why there's a lot of blight going on in our communities, because there are no jobs. So these are things. I've thought of all of these things, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn. I have a lot of experience when it comes to dealing with how economic systems work, because I've been at different stages of them, and I'm a nerdy kind of guy. I say, well, why is it that? So I don't just accept it. I say, well, why is it like this? How can I change it? And the other thing, I've actually put my money where my mouth is, to the tune of large sums of money, where I say, you know what our people need? They need better housing, or they need more understanding landlords, or they need this. And I did it, and that didn't work. So again, like I said, I understand you're saying that we need to have some semblance of wealth, but it doesn't necessarily have to be land. It can be businesses. I agree with you. We do need to dominate a particular industry. Yes, we do. We need to pick one. But if someone is used to living in an apartment, or someone who's used to renting, and then now you're just trying to throw them into home ownership comes with a whole plethora of things that they're not ready for. You got taxes. They may have to pay for garbage. You got to pay for your roof. You got all kinds of crazy maintenance going on. You understand what I'm saying? It's a total different ball game. And the vast majority of our people are not ready for that. They're just not, because they don't have the money management skills. But they can get up, you can go and tell them, go wash your car, you're going to make $20 from that. When you get the $20, put $10 in the savings account for this, that, and the third, and then now you can go blow the other 10 on cigarettes and fried chicken or whatever it is you want to do. We have to start with where we are. Can't say you need to go and buy land or whatever, and I'm not knocking that, because I do think at some point we do need to acquire some, but I think people who know what to do with that need to do that, not just as a blanket statement for all of us, because I know that that game, one, you requires patience, it requires large sums of money, and then you have to have someone who knows how to develop that land, and it has to be in proximity to a source of where people are actually working, or some type of commerce, if you plan on paying your taxes and whatever kind of edifice is on that land is going to be able to sustain itself. So you can share the information with me, and I appreciate your insight.
Can I follow up? Because you see it a lot there. And I'd just like to follow up, if you don't mind. That would be a common courtesy.
Sure.
We assume too often here that we all on the same level when it comes to our income or our wealth. So my point is, I said the land trust, we need to understand what a land trust is, first of all, before we talk about something of that nature here. I said the land trust. I didn't say nothing about going in someone's individual property. I'm not talking about that. All I'm saying, what city are you in, if you don't mind?
I'm from New York.
What part of New York? Because New York State. What part
Brooklyn.
Are you from?
Brooklyn.
Okay, well, absolutely. Well, you're in Brooklyn here, and there's many opportunities. If you can get 10 people together, and I will contact you, and I can show you how we can make $1 million in 6 months. That's with land. That's by ownership. Because in New York, which have some of the most, depends on where you are in New York, because a lot of times people say New York, they be talking about New York City, and they live in many parts, in the urban parts of New York. So all I'm saying to you is there's many opportunities for us to do many things. And I'm talking about African Americans who make 40 up to $500,000 a year. You don't need about 5 to 10 of them to make a difference for any community. And then you can build from there. Once again, I send you enough information, a 300-page report that talks about that and other things that we could do right off the bat. because when we are talking about making a paradigm shift, it's very important that wherever level you're on, you can work from there. But all of us is not on the same level. And those who have a little bit of wealth can come together in your area, put a plan together. Well, the plan's already been mapped out. I'm sending you some information I'd just like for you to look over. And then we can build from there.
So you are essentially saying that those of us who can should do for those of us who can't?
Is that we should show example, because my people, visual people, when they see successful African Americans that they can touch. Now, I'm not talking about in some magazine or on Facebook and all that stuff. I'm talking about where they can touch these people, know their name, they respond in a positive way. Our people are some very powerful people. We just a little misguided because of the leadership we have had for the last 40 plus years have sold us out. But my point to you is, wherever you are, I'm willing to come there for whatever need to be done and put a plan together here with a few people. Don't have to be a lot of people, 5 to 20 people, and we can put together example for other people to follow. That's what I'm talking about.
Let me ask you this. Okay, so you said the example. How does that actually, so let's say we get these group of people together and we go in a blighted area. Let's just take Detroit. We get a group of people and we go and we buy up some property in Detroit. Am I still in alignment with your thought, with your plan?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So we take a group of people, we buy some blighted property in Detroit. How does that help the Detroit community?
Well, we do one block at a time. So it's very simple. We do one block at a time. First people we want to look for is singers, mothers and fathers, and seniors. So seniors are most steady with income. They help them build up the community. It will decrease crime and increase prosperity. And we just start one block at a time. Then won't we...
So, Wait. So you're saying we buy these blighted properties, we renovate them, and then we rent them to, okay, so let's just go with the seniors.
We rent to own. We want to empower people, so we let them know if they are not able to come up with the money to buy the property, they could rent the property for a period of time and then buy it. Our goal is ownership, not to be rented. But in order to get there, we use the vehicle that's available to us to empower people. Then we show people an example of what they can do and go from there. And that's something that's easy to do. It doesn't require a lot of people. Then we can set the example and show the pictures, and they can talk to these people to see what we have done and build from there. So we need example of prosperity, success stories. And that's what we need.
I'm not going to disagree with you.
Oh,
all right. I would like to just check out what you got. And the only reason why I'm saying that is basically it sounds like self-enrichment. So it's like take a group of people. Self-enrichment. It sounds like a group of people trying to get together to see how rich they can get.
That's what you say.
No, I,
that's
well,
your
well,
opinion.
Well,
I'm talking about
no,
that.
No,
I'm not talking about that.
No. I see what you're saying in terms of the example. I am actually talking about doing something specifically for those people. So let's just take the people who are on those other blocks of in Detroit, right? So you have one block that you redeveloping these houses, there's still going to be people selling drugs around the corner on the next block or whatever. There's still going to be little kids who parents may be, their mother may not be able to provide a meal or whatever it is. And what we want to do is focus on trying to help those people, because those are the people that are always going to be pushed to the side, and that's going to perpetuate some of the stigma or some of the problems that we have, because those are the brothers and sisters who have less opportunities, less resources, and suffer the most injustices, and that infuriates us all. But what you're saying is I'm not going to discount it, because during the course of operating this organization, I have learned that most people's motives are self-enrichment, and they're looking for some particular way to do whatever.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Do you know me? For you to make that kind of statement? Well, hold on. Let me finish. I'm being very respectful to you and listen to what you say, but you cannot empower people being with the negativity. I say, just start doing one block at a time. That's what I said, one block at a time. When I said doing one block at a time, that means that I gonna start with one block and move forward. That's what I said.
Right, but you're going to get rich in the process.
You didn't hear me say that. You never heard me say that. I said I'm going to come wherever you are and talk to your people. I didn't see nothing about dealing in the rich for me. I said I don't have that problem. Now, I'm appalled by what you're saying in your leadership position. I'm appalled.
Your phone is breaking up.
Okay. Well, I can get my landline and call back, but what I'm saying, I'm appalled by your response.
I think you're misinterpreting what I'm saying. I'm not saying you.
I'm not interested in anything.
When I say you, I'm saying it as in terms of the group, whatever the individuals. So let me just phrase it that way. So the group, the individuals, once they go and they put their capital at risk, they will be the ones who are expecting a return. And when they take those profits and move on to the next thing, those profits will just enrich themselves. That's what I mean by
that. Let me explain something to you. Make it easy for you. Your group come up with $100,000. But listen to it. It's very easy. Come up with $100,000, and you can leverage that. The term is leverage. So you don't have to use that money for anything. You're just using it to leverage what you have. So you can buy property, fix them up, and let it either rent them out and let the people buy them out over a period of time, and then go to the next block. That's what we're doing across the country. We're already doing this. I'm not telling you something we're not doing. I told you, I run a think tank. I run an African-American think tank. You can pull me up.
I hear you.
I'm not concerned about money. That's not my issue.
I hear you. But what I think, you, again, like I said, I don't think you understand it. But I feel you. I hear what you're saying. I've done exactly the same thing that you're talking about. So that's what I've put myself on the line to do exactly what you're talking about. It's not as easy as you're saying it, but I understand it. But, send me whatever information you have, and we'll look at it. And,
yes, I'm not just for you to share with anybody you want to share with. It's free information.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, brother.
Have a good night.
Thank you. Brother Ronnie.
Hey, this is Ronnie from Mississippi again. Hey, peace, my brother. Hey, I was listening to both of y'all's conversation, and it depicts what we got going on down here in Jackson. And this is what the group that I deal with, and even our new mayor, which is a young brother, decided to do. And you can do this with your organization. I'm not saying you can, but I'm just putting it out there as a suggestion. One of the biggest problems we have in our community is dealing with our kids, right, in education. Am I right?
Yes, that is a problem, yes.
Okay. So what we decided to do was the state has, or the city, has dilapidated homes or even sometimes whole blocks or subdivisions. So through a nonprofit dealing with the city or the state, they will sell us that property for a little bit of nothing. Okay. And what we decided to do was create a teacher's village. All right. And by which what we will do is you can get a contractor to go in and do the work to fix up the locations based on if it's a nonprofit, you can get the money for it. Or even go to the bank and use it as collateral. Okay, because your teachers who will be recruited to teach in the schools will buy this property. Now you got property owners as well as people in the school system that are teaching your kids. You got people who are in stable places. And you can do that in a large city like New York, all over the place. You know, we're just getting ready to do our first teacher's village here with, it'll probably hold about 48 homes. All right. And so, you know, and this just to deal with both of you all dealing with the real estate. It's just something we came up with that seemed to be working because we got this idea from a couple of other places, other cities around the country who did it, and it seems to work really well for them. Fixes your teacher problem with recruiting because it helps them to be a first-time home buyer, property owner. Property taxes go up. You know, you got people in the community that are homeowners, okay? And you get teachers, two for one. All right. So
Who pays the teachers?
No. The teachers are going to be hired by the school system. You know, okay. Most teachers don't own their home, they own homes. So especially when you're a new teacher, you're just going into the school system. But because the organization, and I don't know if you get backing from somebody in the city or city councilman or I don't know what you all have, commissioners. I don't know what they're called. But even they can spearhead it for you to be that face out front as an initiative to say, listen, and matter of fact, the city might even do some matching dollars. But the only person you have to worry about is the contractor who's going to be rehabbing the homes for you. If they know it's for a good purpose, majority of them would do it with very little profit for themselves, due to the fact they get their name out there in regards to helping out the community. And at the same time, if there is money to be made, if you want to make a little money, you can have that money going back to your organization to go do another project.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense or not.
So essentially what you're saying is find a block of dilapidated properties and get them from the city, right? That's not happening here in New York, though. I can tell you that, though. That's not
right, because I know property's prime up here.
Yeah. So you get a block of dilapidated homes, and then you rehab the homes. So I guess you are saying, so you get the properties, and then you use the properties as collateral, or maybe get a 203K HUD loan to rehab it or whatever.
Right.
And then offer those properties, market those properties specifically to teachers?
Is that what you're saying? Yes. You would call it a teacher's village. You know, only teachers going to live in this area of town or this block, you know.
And then the mortgages and things like that are subsidized or something like that?
They still pay their own mortgages. But due to the fact that we're making this a special category, and it's going through, you know how they have the first-time home buyers program, things of that nature?
Right.
Okay. Well, with those programs, those people are able to get, nowadays, it ain't like when they went to the housing market where they did the variable interest rate. But nowadays, you can get them in at fixed prices, especially if you go to a bank, either a black-owned bank, and let them know this is what we want to do for our people. And when you bring them a group of people instead of one or two people, that makes a significant difference on them working with you. So they get good reputations with the bank. We get a good reputation with the community. We're helping out teachers, which we definitely need in our school system. And at the same time, you got now these teachers are becoming property owners, which is leading to their net worth. So that's one of the things we're doing down here in Jackson. You know, we went and looked at the places where they worked in San Francisco, in San Antonio, it was a, the guy, and she did another one out in the Midwest. I can't remember where, but I'm sure if you Google it in there, you do the search on it, you can find the, some the other location. We got the idea from our chief administrative officer that worked at the city. Now I used to be one of the deputy directors for Chukwue Lumumba before he passed, and so that was one of the things we're looking at putting in place. And so it and it and it's one of those things that's worked. We're not. We're not reinventing the wheel, creating nothing new. We're just actually duplicating a process and an effort that's been done already and tailoring it for the environment that we're in.
Okay.
So, so, and I know that you're looking to expand, but and like you were saying, you know, if we do it in small batches, those small batches add up. It's kind of like interest, compound interest. You do it here, get it right. You do it there, get it right. And then eventually, you know, with your ambassadors, you can take to other cities as well.
Right. Okay.
But like I said, it was just a suggestion to my brother.
Thank
something
you.
To look at.
I know it's something to think about. I like yeah. that. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, my friend.
Sister Shamika.
Hi, Brother Lou. Hi, everyone.
Hi. Hey, listen, there's a sister here from Atlanta, Sister uh-huh. Felicia. She was inquiring about the Atlanta chapter. I told her, you know, that you and Brother Ifa were trying to get together, but you guys were kind of like far apart. So I'm glad you're on the call. She had interest in doing something, and Brother Phil and a few other people, so.
Let's get it going. Let's get it going. I know I had to take a little hiatus because Brother Lou knows we have BART communities going on down here as well, and we're doing our first fundraiser this weekend. And so I did reach out to Brother Ifa to let him know about that, so hopefully he can come out and support as well. So that's Brother Lou. I've been meaning to call you because we really do have to talk about that because I definitely want to help start the ambassadorship program here in Atlanta, but you know that we have Spark communities as well, and I want to make sure that we can partner in the best way so that, you know, there's no,
right.
It shouldn't be, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I get it. Yeah. We can do that. That's not a problem.
Perfect.
But there were a few people who asked about what was going on, and I let them know that, you know, you were basically.
Well, let's go. What's the young lady's name? If she's on the phone now, let's exchange phone numbers and let's get
yeah.
it going. Because if nothing else, I have Brother Lou's back. I'm a member. I'm not going to stop any donations as long as I have money coming in that I can support Black Wallets Matter because it's absolutely necessary. I look at Brother Lou as our national organization. BART Communities is going to be a local Atlanta branch, if you will. But our focus right now is on getting a physical business, Black-owned business economic center set up in Atlanta where we can support Black businesses opening up, and then we can start to redistribute that money into our communities through restaurants, through fresh food markets, through, you know, beauty supply stores, through anything where Blacks dominate in spending patterns. Because what has been happening is that other races have been taking our culture and selling it back to us. I told Brother Lou and team a while ago, I went to a restaurant with a girlfriend, and I thought she said it was Black-owned. The bouncers were Black, the DJs were Black, the music was Black, the bartenders, the waitresses, the consumers. It was wall-to-wall packed in there on the patio, inside, everything. And we were eating Mexican food, and it was a Mexican restaurant, y'all. They took our culture, and they do it so well that we come and patronize them Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we just give all of our money. So I'm sure it's probably one of us on this phone that can create that experience for our people so that we can keep that money home. So that's our goal, here in Atlanta with Spark Communities. And like I said, Brother Lou is our national organization. I want to make sure that when we form this ambassadorship program, that we're able to partner in a way that we both get to accomplish our goals, because I absolutely positively believe that within the next few years, if we don't secure a plaza here in Atlanta, we won't be able to as blacks, because we haven't been able to amass enough of the wealth individually to make these things happen. So it's time for us to collectively come together and put a focus on having a footprint here in Atlanta. All other races have a footprint. If there's ever an economic downturn and we have to start to work with one another, you know every race is going to work with their race. We have to learn to work together, because we haven't done that successfully based on what they've done to us. So it's time for us to throw all of that to the wind. So what? Yes, slavery happened. We can talk about all of it. But now we have to put our money where our mouth is. We have to put our actions where our mouth is. We have to start creating the things that we need to be successful and to come together as black people, because right now our lives depend on it. Your kids' lives depend on it. We are 100% consumers. We're 100% employees. So in the position that we're in now, all they have to do is what? Stop employing us. If they stop employing us, how do we feed our families? So there are four ways. You can hunt for your food. You can have a job and pay for your food. You can steal for your food. You see what I'm going? So the other part is when you're talking about these social securities that they're trying to cut out, health care, the main one now. Then when you talk about social security not going to be there later, and then you're talking about welfare would be the nail in the coffin for black people, y'all, because we won't have that support. So while we all are employed, while we are generating $1.3 trillion in purchasing power, we need to start putting that to use in circulation in the black communities. And in one way in doing that is joining Black Wallets Matter and becoming a member. That's first and foremost. You came on the call, something got you here. You know, it's just, it's important. It's time for us to do it. So anyway, so Brother Lou, you and I have to talk, because I want to make this happen. And so if you have another young lady on the phone, you have other people from Atlanta, they're able, willing, and ready, then they don't have to wait on me, but we can come together, we can strategize, we can come up with a plan. I'm definitely willing to do that.
Okay, great.
So we can make that happen.
I'll put you in touch. I'll put you in touch with the sister, so we can go from there. We discussed this before the last time when we talked, and basically there was a sister. She came. She was saying a lot of those things happen because we don't have economic dignity, right? So it's like it's the poor way we spend our money. She's like, we don't support each other. We don't invest in each other. We don't invest in our communities, but we want to look wealthy, right, even though we really don't have it, you know, and even when some of us do make it, we don't want to share the information or the resources.
Right.
And so other ethnic groups, when they make it, when they do, they share and they actually pull the resources of the group to pull up that next person. It's crazy. It's crazy. But you know, again, like the brother said, the brother, when he was talking about the you know, pulling the money and buying the land and the houses and things like that. Yes, our people do want to see an example. They do need to see. They do need to see examples of success and things like that. So, absolutely, that's what we want to establish. So, thank you for
sharing. That's why I raised my hand. Say something anyway, is because I wanted to absolutely tell the gentleman that I love that idea, and that would be a great thing to do. Are y'all requiring a certain length of time for the teachers to have to teach in the schools in order to buy a home there? I would want to know that answer. And then the last thing, Brother Lou, is just with what you said about the dignity and everything that the lady told you, I'm reading this book now, and I encourage everybody to go get it. It's called Breaking the Curse of Willie Lynch by Alvin Morrow. And you can say all of those things, but you really can't say all of those things as if that's just who we were at the core without reading this book and understanding the things that they did to divide us as a people, because they used every difference there was in us. And those things are still, they're still proliferating through our culture now. So they used sex, male versus female, and now you have these dominant females who are really running the darn world, you know? And then you have, they use skin color. They use fat, skinny, male, you know, young, old. Every difference that there was between us, they used it to separate us. And then they taught us to love them and only to trust them. So we didn't even trust each other. So now, you know, and he told them that they would be able to control the Negro slave for at least 300 years and maybe longer. So it is up to us to unlearn and relearn everything that we've ever, you know, been told. Research is out here. Information is out here. We have to seek it. We got to understand what we're dealing with as a people, because only when we understand what we're dealing with as a people can we get rid of the excuses and take action. So thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Have a good one. Brother Cujo.
Hey, how you doing, Brother Luke?
Peace.
Hey, I just wanted to address one thing, maybe a couple real quick. First of all, I'd like to say to everybody, thank you. I was glad to hear everybody's input today. And I want to give a special thank you to all of the people, the members, and if there happen to be any guests still here that have been generous enough with their time to actually use 36 minutes of their time to examine the blueprint that's been laid out for this organization. These are our marching orders, and I'm sure anybody that has actually seen this would see the clear value in it and the direction that we're going in. And I'd also like to say, because it seems like we don't talk about this enough, and it's almost like taboo in the black community to talk about money. I think it's pretty clear to anybody that has actually, like I said, been generous enough to spend 36 minutes of their time watching the blueprint that this organization is about being based in economics. Is clearly about making money. Okay, but beyond making the money, we have all of these good ideas to where we want to serve a benefit in the community. I think it's obvious to everybody on the call and everybody that would ever come across this, we live in a capitalistic society. It takes money to do anything, almost anything that you want to do. So the benefit that we want to serve, we want to help the underprivileged, and we want to feed people, we want to clothe people, we want to give people jobs, we want to help people with education, we want people to have financial literacy. It's going to take money to do every single one of these things. This is why we have a base in economics. This is why this organization focuses on economics, because we're aware of the simple fact that we live in a capitalist society, and it's going to take money to do everything that we're going to do. Now, it's obvious. I'm sure it's apparent or obvious to everybody that, yes, how are we going to make money? We're going to produce successful businesses. This organization is about producing successful businesses. Anybody that's watched the blueprint can clearly see that these are some of the main focuses and issues that we're looking to combat. Single mothers who are not making enough money. Men who are not making enough money to provide for their family, an opportunity for their children. We want to, being structured as a B Corp, I would assume that anybody that's in this, actually a member of this organization, has actually researched some of these things, and are in the process of digging deep with us to get to the root. And this is where these ideas come from. But I just like to, at this point, draw attention back to this focus. We're here to build a revenue-generating machine. Other cultures, they have this type of stuff set up. Well, I don't have to go into all of the details about that. Everybody knows, just like one of the communities that we take ideas from and we may model some of the things that they do is the Jewish community. I don't think anybody on the line has a question that Jewish people have money and that provides them certain protections and certain opportunities and things like that and certain security. How do we get that? By getting the money that takes care of stuff like that in a capitalist society. It's going to take business. We have to have businesses in order to give people jobs. We have to have successful businesses that have high profit margins. That is the focus, and that is part of the reason why we're able to network together. People are able to bounce ideas off of each other and use ideas because as this thing grows and builds, it's going to be necessary when we purchase large businesses, large scale businesses. The ultimate focus of this organization is not to build a corner store, not to buy a house. We want to provide hundreds and potentially thousands of jobs. So we have to be thinking big. It's absolutely necessary. As a collective, we're focused on getting together and making something work. That something, first and foremost, is going to be a business that has a high profit margin. It's necessary to have a high profit margin so we can pay people good, and we also have money to take care of paying lawyers and lobbyists so we're in a position to throw some weight around and make some things happen for us. And
go ahead, brother. You on a roll because that's exactly what we're about. Go ahead. Hello?
Yeah, sorry about that. Man, I had to open up the gate. But, yeah, I kind of just wanted to highlight that because I think it's necessary for us to approach this with a certain demeanor. And excuse the expression, but we got to come at this like we got some balls, and we ready to throw some weight around. We do the focus in this organization is to do big things. So it's going to take people that's ready to open up their mind and think big, that have a strong conviction. And this is why I think the organization appeals to people who themselves have at least a state of mind or are geared towards building legacy. And for founders, especially and particularly for founding members, this can and should be a part of your legacy because the thing is going to work. It is going to grow.
It's growing now.
Right. It's been doing that over the course of this year, and it's going to continue to do so. And we're going to continue to provide more opportunities for ourselves. And by doing that, I don't speak those words from a selfish perspective, but for the people that's involved, we're growing, and we're able to do bigger things. And we need all of the input that people are offering. It's valuable, and it's going to be used. We have marching orders. We have an excellent plan that's been laid out. I encourage everybody to look at it again. Just because I look at it periodically myself. And even I go over old town hall meetings periodically as well, because I want to be in tune with what's going on. When it comes to me talking to somebody about it, I want them to understand the value of it. I want them to understand where we're going with this, how big is really becoming. We're not here just to talk about something, just to say something.
Right.
The main focus is actually getting things done. And I think I would say that everything is very clear. Everything is very clear. And it's been a consistent development from its inception. So I would like to just encourage everybody to stay strong and be on yourself about coming up with these different ideas. Don't be afraid to offer your input, because it's valuable. There's a lot of things going on. We're building a machine. A machine has many moving parts. And I encourage every one of us to be one of those moving parts.
Thank you, brother.
I'll leave it there. Okay.
I thank you. You echoed the right kind of sentiment, and you basically put the exclamation point on this call for the evening. I appreciate that. So we are going to wrap this one up. Again, like the brother said, we appreciate all the people, all the guests coming on the call, hanging out with us tonight. And again, if you like anything that you've heard tonight and you have not yet joined us, we want to invite you to become a member. Again, it's $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold, and $50 as a platinum member. All right. And so with that, oh, wait a minute. Who's Sister Shamika? Hold on. Yes, Sister Shamika.
Oh, I just wanted to tell him amen. That was excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. That's it.
Okay, thank you. All right, so brothers and sisters, we are going to end this call and see you guys next week. Peace. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Be blessed.
Yes. Thank you. Good night.
Wonderful evening.